Hello, welcome to the big show. Yes, we're here to discuss all of the big stories in tech that have gone on this week. There's been loads of stuff happening. We're going to steer clear of Momo, though, because it's a bit contentious at the moment, unfortunately.
There goes my chosen story.
All right, well, we'll do Momo then. So, because Bart picked it.
Well, I've a choice of two, so I'll bin Momo as long as no one else steals Facebook stealing all your data.
Oh, we can't. Let's do Momo.
It'll certainly get a conversation going, won't it?
Joining me, start us off, top left, Camps, how the devil are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Doing really good.
How's the running? How was the gait analysis, mate? That looked kind of, that was techie.
It were really interesting. So yeah, Cam was all over the shop, get on a treadmill. They're filming me from the side, from the front, in terms of how my feet, my knees align, how my ankle reacts when it hits the floor, which isn't good. So I'm having to have some bespoke orthotic insoles made because my ankle really does ride in, which is that's ultimately the cause of why it broke.
You didn't break your leg because of me then?
No, I didn't break my leg just because of you. No, you gave it the kiss of death. You pushed it over.
Right, okay.
But yeah, absolutely because of that. But yeah, really cool tech, how they slow it all down, and then some pressure plates where you stand on and it looks exactly which parts of your foot are putting what sort of pressure when you land. So good, learned a lot from it, and I'm getting
they play the music when you're doing it?
Chariots of Fire, yeah.
I've got a copy of the video though, so we can dub some music on it.
But I mean, so do you go to that kind of thing thinking about how you run in your head, and it's like a bronze god on a beach, and then actually when you watch the footage back you look like Forrest Gump with the splints on?
No, my main thought when I were on that treadmill, bearing in mind there were about five people in the room, is don't fall off this treadmill. don't run too fast, don't run too slow, don't trip up for Christ's sake, and don't end up on your ass in front of five people.
And did you have to pay for this?
It was done through a podiatry appointment, so I've had treatment. I've used Bupa for the treatment, which I use through work. So all the MRIs and everything, had the podiatry appointment, and the gait analysis was included in that. So yes, ultimately it was paid for.
Blimey.
And yeah, not particularly cheap, but very, very thorough.
Five people in the room? No, not particularly cheap.
I think there was a specialist, there was a computer operator, but there was another lady who had an awful lot of opinion, but I didn't really get what she did, and then two students.
Right.
So, yeah.
Next to him, making a welcome return, Bart Bushart, how the devil are you, mate?
The honest answer is I have a bloody head cold and I'm mildly cranky because of it, but no, I'm grand.
Good man. Good to have you back, mate. It's been a long time since we've seen you.
Yeah, the timetables are hard to line up, and 8 p.m. isn't a great time for me, but when we get it to work, it's always a pleasure to pop in with my friends across the channel while we're still sharing the same union.
We're all getting Irish passports, so.
Apparently there is a queue, so.
I'm eligible. I'm actually eligible for an Irish passport because of my dad, so. The kids therefore are eligible because of me, and Sharon
and the grandfather rule, right? So your dad would still count for your kids.
Yeah, exactly. But the only problem is the wife might have to stand in a different queue.
Oh, don't go through the blue queue.
I don't want to leave Europe. Next to him, it's Atlee.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right, mate. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I was a little sick last week, but I'm feeling a lot better now.
Yeah, you wimped out on us. Soft northerner.
Well, no, the funny thing is I would have been fine if I didn't have to talk. My voice was just shot. I couldn't talk at all.
Actually, are you probably further south than us?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, if we in the cold Canadian north, except you're actually south.
Yeah.
From where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next to him, it's Alistair. How you doing, mate?
Well, I'm fine, thank you very much.
Excellent, pal.
Had
a good week?
Just putting the house on the market, so lots of form filling and stuff like that.
Oh, right, okay. Have you gotten somewhere new to go to, or are you just selling yours first?
We're just selling ours first, and then we'll escape the country.
Where are you going?
South of France.
Oh, you lucky git. Where to? Bordeaux?
South of France. We were thinking Montpellier.
Montpellier is lovely. I've been to Montpellier. I used to stay at a place called Canon, which is just up the coast, about 10 miles from, more, a couple of miles from Montpellier. Very nice there.
What's it called again?
Canon. Carnon.
Right, okay. I don't know it.
It's excellent. The Camargi's beautiful, mate. All the white horses and all that kind of stuff. It's stunning.
Yeah.
You'll enjoy it. So you're just going to write from there?
Yeah, well, I chose Montpellier. It's not the place I know best, but there's a lot of industry around there. They've got a big tech vibe. Zendesk are based down there, Aquafadas, people like that. And also Toulouse isn't far, so.
So you're going to do your George Bernard Shaw bit with your typewriter and your mojito out on the terrace? Punching away.
Something like that, yeah.
Good. That'd be great, mate. Make sure you get
It's the Brexit thing that's pushed us, to be honest.
Really?
When I go out there, I don't notice any anti-British sentiment at all.
No, there isn't.
But over here, you know, people are starting to shout at each other in the street.
Do
you remember when you're at school and you're learning about the Second World War, and it occurs to everyone, you go, why didn't all the Jews leave Germany in the mid-30s when they had the chance?
Well, they tried.
It's kind of a bit our way of feeling at the moment.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's... I think the parallel might be a bit more severe for them than it is for you, but yeah, I get the point.
Hmm.
Yeah. Muller.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Satiated on curry.
Yeah, and I was going to be in the Momo story, but I got scared.
Yeah, because I told you today, if you said another word about Momo, you were going to get cold STFU and kicked.
Yeah, I might not say anything during that story.
I think that would be a wise idea, pal. A very wise idea.
Yeah.
The week in tech, then, who's got the fastest fingers in the West and who's going to give us the first story to go through? Of course, it's Atlee. Bloody hell, I thought I was going to say Cam's then.
I told you to do the Holo.
Right, HoloLens 2, hands-on, feels like practical magic, it says. You're on mute, dude. Atlee, you're on mute. Mute. Or you're knackered again. That's all right, mate.
Trying not to cough in anybody's ear, and I left myself off. So this is just about Microsoft's new version of the HoloLens. It's version 2, which is kind of funny because for a while there, they were talking about that they were going to skip version 2 and go to version 3. But I guess they brought it out as a practical version 2. And... basically, the design is a fair bit different. It's much more focused towards the business sector, just because at $3,500, I don't think it's much of a consumer toy.
Why?
I think that sort of prices it out of most people's pocketbooks. But it's quite interesting how it works. I got a chance to play around with the HoloLens version 1 a couple of times, and it was really nice. And I almost got one, but then I couldn't see the practical need for a ton of them out yet. So I'm just wondering if anybody here has ever seen anything like this out in the business field yet.
No, mate. So my question's got to be with things like HoloLens and the Okta one. What's the ubiquity of it? Because I've never heard anyone who says that they own one. I've not seen one in the wild, in inverted commas. They just look like white elephants.
That's my thought too, is that I mean there are a couple of interesting edge cases that are showing up here and there, but I mean I think isn't this that the American government ordered a whole bunch of these?
Yeah, they were going to run the next nuclear war off HoloLens and Xbox and Xbox controllers.
Yeah, I think they were using them for training tools or something like that.
Yeah, I could see them in military training. I could see them used in places like maybe surgical operating theatres.
Well, even if you're just a technician trying to fix something that you need both of your hands for, it's just, I think we're just a bit early, that the tech is still just too bulky to make these things. You know, all you can see is the potential, but it's still potential. You know, I think we're still a wee while off.
Although, when you really think about it, the differences between the version 1 and the version 2 are actually quite startling with regards to weight and comfort level, and also just some of the design. They really have sort of taken a focus on the business use case of it. They've even made it so that the lenses themselves will flip up sort of like a welder's mask. so that you're able to use them and then flip them out of the way to do stuff in the real world and then flip them back down when you need to use the VR capabilities. But I again, it's almost like a technology in search of problems to solve.
Can you get a prescription? I used the version 1 several times, and it was the one product that sold me on the whole mixed reality.
Really?
Yeah, virtual
realities for children.
Using them is quite fantastic.
Hang on, mate. Let Alistair go on. Sorry, go on, Alistair.
Yeah, it was just the VR, I think, is overhyped. It's just for games. Those could be war games, but they're just for games because you can't see anything other than what's in the headset. Augmented reality is like massive, massive hype. But it's when you do bring them together where you get your mixed reality. And, of course, there's nothing unique in that sense about HoloLens, but I thought HoloLens did it really well.
All right.
In terms of visibility and just the modelling. I mean, there was this, I think, the one. I've not tried this version 2 yet. It looks great. But the version 1, the thing that got me was mapping out a room. So you just stick it on your head, just put it in the right mode, and you just look around. You just look everywhere, and it maps everywhere you looked. And within about 30 seconds, it's rebuilt the room. And, all its components and furniture as a 3D model.
Has it given it dimensions as well as?
Yes, yeah. And you could do stuff like, you know, having done it, you could look underneath the desk and stuff like this. It was quite remarkable.
Bloody hell.
And then when we started investigating applications, I know it's a bit of an obvious one, but medical training was astonishing. Because before you go on to, you know, real dead bodies, there's a lot of training on plastic models. And actually to have like two or three people standing on the side of effectively nothing at all, going through the process of surgery. And it's kind of just sitting, hovering there in space in front of you as you're kind of removing bits of intestine. It's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, no, that is impressive. I mean, the thing that's interesting, if you're saying... If you're actually quite ravey there about version 1, so version 2 has got to be an uplift from that, unless it's Skype, of course.
Yeah, I mean, the big helmet kept sliding all over the place. I assume that's the same with all VR-type things. But this does look quite nice and small and light, and I can't see any cables hanging around, which makes a nice change.
Mm.
I mean, I know it was wireless anyway, but you know what I mean? There was no kind of loose bits on this new version I'm looking at in the pictures. I quite like the look of that.
Atlee, you were saying?
No, that's okay. It doesn't really physically weigh that much less, but it's better balanced, so it feels like it weighs a lot less. And they've done a number of really interesting things with the design to sort of make it fit and sit better, to make it more durable more feasible for a long-term wear.
Yeah, the version 1 helmet looked like the helmet from, what was that sci-fi film?
Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers, yeah. Whereas this looks much more reasonable.
Bob Beach in the chat room says, version 3, isn't that the one that Microsoft always gets right?
3.11, I think.
Yeah, and Deepan says HoloLens 3.11 for work groups.
That's it.
Enterprise only, though, is that going to be a? Is that a mistake?
I don't think it's a mistake now. I mean, this is just way early in this whole category's existence. I think it makes the most sense to do it in a small, controlled way with people who have big checkbooks.
I did see a video of one of the fire services using it as a training method because they could have a more realistic scenario, where normally when you do these scenarios, when you train with the fire service, you can have a fire, but it's not the same kind of fire. It's in a controlled way, but where they could have casualties where they would actually look, when you look at them, would be bleeding or with a leg missing or something. So there was definitely, that was probably HoloLens 1. There was things out there for training being used.
Mm.
But I can't find the video.
So
it was also the constant visibility through the visor was good, because I've tried other things from Epson and so on, where you put on a pair of wacky glasses, but they're still a bit like the Google Glass. You kind of have to squint and look in a very particular way, and then it's great. You know, you're looking at a bare wall. They've loaded in the map of the wiring diagrams into the system, and then you're kind of working out where to drill a hole, that kind of stuff. But it was very kind of squinty.
Mm.
So HoloLens just flips down. It was just always there. I mean, it's really quite... I look forward to trying this one. I know someone who's probably got one. I can get to have a go.
About the Kinect sensor, though, that's more mainstream, isn't it? They've got a new one of them coming out.
Mm.
That's something my all buy. They all use.
What's the other one? The Octo... I don't remember the sodding name of it. The one that Facebook bought. Oculus Rift.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for games.
I was going to say, Oculus Rift doesn't appear to have had any versioning at all. It's just, I mean, I'm sure they've updated software and things like that, but that's kind of gone very, very quiet.
Well, they're trying to work out how to grab all your data secretly, aren't they?
Yeah.
Doesn't it also require sensors placed around the room?
Oculus
No, the Oculus doesn't.
No,
I mean, they are using the Oculus for military training. I know that much.
Yeah. I think Oculus is one of those where, for me, all of the VR gaming platform is just not there at a consumer level at all. I think it's absolutely miles away right now.
Yeah.
And on that basis, probably anybody who's using Oculus and to a large degree, probably still HoloLens is well behind closed doors.
Yeah, I don't. I think Bart's point about, you know, if you're in development, then you need someone with a big checkbook because you want to sell some of these, because that'll then fund the next version, and then eventually it'll go down to the consumer. The timescale on this seems tremendously elongated, though, doesn't it?
I could see this totally being used in operating theatres. You know, like at the moment when they're using cameras, and you see on news clips where you've got a surgeon who's doing something and watching what they're doing on a big screen. I could see a surgeon having some of these so they can see through the lens, they can see with their own eyes, but they can see the screen as well in front of them on the hood.
Yeah, augmented reality is the thing that excites me, definitely. The idea of being able to interact with the average, you know, the outside world and get information about that outside world. So you look at signs and the signs are instantly translated if you're abroad, or, you know, that kind of stuff is really cool.
I think this is sort of the precursor of all the stuff that we loved about Blade Runner, where things were showing up on screens that were contextual and you're able to get information when you needed it, where you needed it.
Yeah, I mean, Bob Beach in the chat room here, I've got absolutely no interest in virtual reality, but definitely excited about augmented reality. And I think that's the way I feel as well. If you're going to give me VR, then I really couldn't care less. It's because I saw it done really badly.
But I think with AI, Ewan, you're never going to do that with a device the size of HoloLens, are you? You'd be looking at something more like Google Glass. In terms of something like, for instance, street signs that would be mounted essentially on the fine Hoyas that you're wearing, and really you wouldn't know. Nobody would know, ideally.
Well, I think that what you're probably going to see is something from a company like Apple, where they've got their augmented reality built into their OS, and then you're going to see them put out some sort of glasses or something that work just as a screen, that is basically a projector for what could come up on the phone, and they can project to the glasses, and you basically have all of your computing power in your pocket, but the information's in front of you where you need it.
Mm.
Because then your phone already has location sensors, all of that stuff, and enough power realistically to do a lot of the things that they're doing for augmented reality. So I think that that's probably going to be more the way the consumer play will go. I think this is more of a immersive, detail-oriented, really fantastic for training tools and for remote operations. You're going to be able to have people that are specialists, let's say, in an oil rig, being able to look at a particular drill site from remote distance and be able to, you know, give them information remotely so that you can have someone fix it on site without, you know, having to fly out some specialist that costs you $50,000 a day.
Well, absolutely. It's if you like, augmented reality, but it's stereo optical, and you can walk around it.
Well, it gives you so much more detail and it gives you so much more context and spatial integration.
Yeah.
Are they going to come boxed with drones in the future?
Well, you can already get the fat sharks, can't you? So you can see what the drone's seeing.
Yeah. Epson do a pair of glasses that do for drone flyers. Yeah.
Good story, mate. Bart, do you want to give us your story? I'd rather get it out of the way.
I'm happy to talk about a bunch of different things if people have.
Go on, stick it in, mate.
Well, the Momo thing just sort of struck me this week because maybe I was living on some sort of planet, some sort of different planet, but I didn't hear about it at all until coffee time in work yesterday when it was all a flutter because apparently all the local schools had been telling parents that you should show your kids Momo so they're not frightened by it when it comes up in random YouTube videos. I was like, wow, geez, this must be a really big story. And then I popped on, I subscribe to the BBC World News podcast, which is great because you get a half an hour three times a day of like all the news compressed. And basically the whole thing's a bloody urban legend. I'm thinking, we're going around terrorizing our kids. And all it is basically is anecdote amplified through modern social media. In the space of a few days, it's turned, nothing has become this major crisis. It staggers me how we've gotten to here where these things can develop like so quickly. Urban legends used to take years to develop and now we get them in days. And there's no there. Wow.
Doesn't that explain how you can have a YouTube star?
Arguably, but the YouTube's like Justin Bieber was real. He existed. I was going to say he's a human being.
Planned in advance.
Well, so the video is real because you can play. You can find it and you can play it. And there is instruction in there for the purposes of suicide. And there are multiple versions of it. So that's not a fabrication.
But it's not showing up in the middle of random kids' videos.
My understanding is...
The plural of anecdote is not data because as best as I can tell, there's the odd anecdote, but this isn't like every 5 minutes kids are seeing it because what the parents in work found pretty quickly was that when they raise it with their kids, what they were doing was they were terrorizing their own kids because the telly told them to.
Yeah. Quite.
My understanding
was... Another kid went, oh yeah, that's all over the internet. I went, what are you talking about, Mum?
My understanding was that this has come through in WhatsApp, not YouTube.
Yeah. So what I've read upon on this, Ewan, is so going back probably, I think it was around about September, October last year, there was a scenario, I can't remember where it was in the world, but a scenario where something happened in WhatsApp, you message this number as a game. This number was went through to Momo or whatever was behind at the back end of that number, and then Momo was interacting with kids with people via WhatsApp, telling them to do things. Apparently, so this is last year, and from what I can understand, then it's either died a death or it's certainly calmed down. More recently. So there's no, to my knowledge, from the articles I've read, no evidence of any hacking anywhere. No evidence of Momo jumping into things or engaging directly with people. It was almost like the WhatsApp had engaged with Momo first. However, more recently, then the whole image came from a Japanese sculpture for an art exhibition. That image has been taken and then used for Momo. More recently, then that image has been embedded into a number of of children's videos on YouTube and YouTube for Kids. So partway through, it's almost been edited into a non-official Peppa Pig and others jumping in and telling kids to do certain things. I think one of the stories I'd read was a five-year-old cut her own hair or something. So again, no hacking. It's been embedded and it's been dropped in a number, I don't know what that number is, of video clips. Kids have watched it. From what I can see now, Yeah, absolutely right. Social media's picked it up and run with it. Kids are aware. And from what I can see now, actually, more of the damage isn't coming from kids seeing the videos. More of the damage is kids talking about it to each other. We've had two awful nights with my seven-year-old daughter this week, and it's because they've been talking about it in the playground. One of the kids in her class has told them about it, told them that a tall, dark-haired girl is coming to kill them. It's exactly how it was portrayed to my daughter this week. So two awful, horrendous nightmare nights. And that's kids being, well, I'd say kids being kids. Yeah.
Kids being assholes.
The nasty side of kids being kids, terrorizing each other. That for us has come from, yeah, absolutely the media hype around this that's spilling in and kids are hearing it and then sharing it in the playground.
And they're probably getting very misinformed messages from parents who've been frightened into having this difficult conversation with their kids, which they may not be equipped to actually have with their kids. So they're then sending those kids back into the playground to go and infect this virusy meme thing throughout the rest of the school.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, yeah, it's rife right now. And I think parents, a lot of parents are ill-informed and don't educate the kids on online safety enough. I know we've talked about this every year for the last few years when it comes to Internet Safety Week, but I think parents who are ignorant to things like this and then either being too open and sharing too much more detail than the kid needs, or not explaining it clear enough and explaining that it's not real, not understanding the background. So again, that's because of the social spin on it.
Yeah, I think at one time everyone would have had a good old laugh, a bit like with Pikachu giving children epileptic fits. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
There was some episode where there was flashing lights and there were stories of people going bonkers. But I think after the Slender Man murder, parents are getting freaked out very easily.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, there's no substitute for just, you know, putting the family computer in a family room where the kids aren't alone. And just keep an eye on what they're doing. But that, I think there's a lot of parents don't do that.
Have you got kids?
I don't have kids, which is great. I can get to just pontificate.
Well, wonderful. No, because, I mean, that's... So I have been... We've tried to be really responsible with the kids in terms of the way that we deal with them with the internet. But they want their own device. They want their own room. Ellis has got to the point now where he's playing PlayStation and he's on his computer and his social life is through a conduit device to a large extent. He's got friends across the world that he plays PS4 with and they're good mates. And I'm not part of that. I can't monitor that. I can't watch it. He's signed up for... He's at a stage now where he's 15 years old, so he knows, how to sign up for things online that his peers are into, and he's signed up by himself. He's got an email account that he's changed the password on, and I don't have access to it anymore. And I'm just kind of like, well, he is 15, so I don't have that. 15 is
very different, right, to what we're talking about here with the Momo Challenge sort of age. Yeah. By 15, you would hope that all the good work you've done in the last decade has paid off, and you now have a responsible young adult. Sorry.
Yeah, but he's
not. Yeah, I don't know what parents would have to do. I mean, when my kids were growing up, I was lucky. It was sort of the beginning of this, and I basically just set up a proxy, and they were allowed to access anything they wanted through the internet in the house. But everything went through a proxy, and everything was recorded. I stored literally terabytes of data with the promise to them I wouldn't look at it unless there was a reason to look at it. But it still would have left a ton of stuff to sift through if I really had to. But I'm absolutely ecstatic that I don't have to go through this with young children right now.
Yeah, I mean, Deep Pan's put, does the family computer still exist? It's all phones and tablets, and that's it. My son is not interested. I did some photos for the school play, and I sent them to him. I put them in a zip file. I said, just pass this to your mates, and they can download it and then zip it. He's like, they can't do that.
What? Yeah.
What? What do you mean they can't do that? Well, they've all got phones. Well, yeah, but all they've got to do is use their mom and dad's computer or use the computer in the house. They haven't got any computers in the house, Dad.
Yeah, you're going to have to share it on social media. That's the only way you're going to get stuff shared.
Well,
yeah.
No, they could download the files. So I had to put the files up individually, not zipped, in my drop zone system. And then they would go and they'd grab the files themselves. but I couldn't put them in as a zip file because they didn't have a device physically where they could download a zip file and unzip it.
Everything is done through sharing links, either in the main, absolutely right, from social media, occasionally, Dropbox, Box, places like that.
Yeah. I mean, Ellis has gone through thousands of messages a day, and I haven't clocked any of them, and I'm not going to be able to clock any of them. He is beyond my control now in terms of internet access. And to a certain degree, his sister is getting close to that. She's 10, but because she's had Ellis as a kind of a peer influence, she's a lot further on than the average 10-year-old is, and she does an awful lot herself. And we ask her questions, and be honest, has anyone said anything to you? Is there anything that you're worried about? No, it's all fine, okay. And she's not doing any behaviours that make her look like she's stressed about it, so we just have to accept that that's the case.
Yeah, Erin's got her own iPad, and she's 7. And she can't download any apps herself. That all has to be done through me. She doesn't know any of her own passwords. She does have an email address, but she doesn't know that. We do let her do FaceTime, but the only numbers that she's got is mine and my wife's number in there. So we're drip feeding her into how to use the technology without giving her free rein. But I do check it. I check her iPad. It's on charge outside her bedroom. It's not allowed to be charged in her room overnight. And yeah, I'll pick it up and I'll have a quick check through to make sure I'm happy with everything in there. She knows what she's allowed to do and what she isn't allowed to do. And she will absolutely come over and say, Daddy, can I do? She knows that she's not allowed to chat. She knows when she plays Roblox, if anybody tries to chat, she has to come and show me. So she's very clued up on what she can and can't do. But she's still only 7. She's still a little girl and scaring quite easy. And for me, the damage this week's in the playground, not in the...
Yeah.
Not in any clips or anything like that.
Well, I do think that there's one good thing about the way authentication has evolved, and I think that the fact that two-factor authentication does give parents the ability to sort of stopgap some things, because you can set up a two-factor authentication that requires the parent's device to be the one that authenticates new things, like new applications being installed, new accounts being added, things like that, or changes to the password. So I think that's pretty much the parent's best bet right now if they want to be able to control their child from, you know, setting up a new Facebook account or setting up another Twitter account on their devices. It doesn't stop them from going to another computer and doing it, but it does stop them from accessing it on the devices you've given them.
Thankfully, actually, parental tools and stuff have got a lot better since I would have been younger. So, you know, there is more to be worried about and there is more danger, but there are also more tools. So at least the swings and roundabouts.
Right. Yeah. Moving on then. Next story. Enough on Momo.
I was
quite impressed there.
Because it took up two... Both of our morning coffees yesterday and today were taken up by Momo. Yesterday was all about how terrible it was, and today was all about how terrible it was that it wasn't terrible. And it was just fascinating that we went from panic to, oh, sugar, we shouldn't have panicked in 24 hours. And that was just in a random coffee room in a random office in Ireland. You know,
because like I said, the video is real. It's just not as ubiquitous as people wanted to make out. But whoever's got the thought process to come up with, listen, kids, it's a crossways for attention, it's long ways for results, has got some serious problems, and they need screwing up. They need taking round the back of somewhere and having the shit kicked out of them full stop, even for coming up with that as a hoax. I'll gladly volunteer that.
Alistair. Of course, does anyone here use Snapchat? Or WhatsApp? Sorry, WhatsApp.
Yeah, I use WhatsApp.
Oh, yeah, WhatsApp, yeah.
Yeah, a lot.
All right, I just wondered.
No,
I was just on a Skype conference this week and for work, and I said, how does everyone want to keep in touch? Is it really, are we really going to send each other emails? It's very difficult to track. And the guy running it said, oh, well, you know, we can use WhatsApp. And I just blurted out, oh, I thought that was for children. And everyone else went really quiet, and then a little voice whispered, so did I.
Yeah, no.
So it's not then.
Oh, WhatsApp. Yeah. So nice. I'm in a lot of WhatsApp groups. So there's one through my networking group, which is just social. So I went out yesterday with a few of them to have a drink, and people were going, where are you at the moment? So we just send a location out to the group.
Could you use that as an alternative to Slack?
It is. It's a quicker entity than Slack because you get the notifications come up. It's more like a text in terms of the way that you can interact with the group of
people.
Message,
right? It's just not Apple-specific iMessage. It's iMessage for every platform.
But cross-platform.
Yeah, but it's the groups are far easier to set up. That's the thing, and the limitation of who can and who can't be part of that admin group. It's useful.
Yeah, almost everybody's using WhatsApp.
Yeah,
you're talking about WhatsApp.
So it keeps history.
Yeah.
And documents.
And it's end-to-end encrypted, so it's only the people that are in that group can see it. There's no
and Facebook.
Yeah,
but Facebook does own it, and they have said that it's going to be sort of brought into the umbrella of their messaging and everything else.
But it's end-to-end.
There could be a little more harvesting done from it.
No, but it's genuinely end-to-end encryption. There's no one else sees it apart from the peers that are in there.
But they manage the keys, Ewan, so you're still trusting that no one puts a public key in there that's not for you. So, yes, they're using the Signal protocol. Yes, their protocol is in theory safe, but only if you're managing your own keys. And no one wants to manage their own keys because that's a giant pain in the backside.
So, right.
Yeah. You know,
so Facebook is managing the keys. We have no control over whether they decrypt it partway through, take a look at it, take information out of it, and then re-encrypt it before they send it out from the servers.
If that's the case, then I'm going to.
The Germans may save you, Ewan, because when Facebook announced they wanted to merge the three platforms into one messaging platform, they were immediately slapped with an injunction in Germany, and that's still ongoing in the courts.
Yeah.
Cool. I was just saying, though, if that's the case, I think I might break up the group between me and my girlfriend, in case the wife sees it.
Since we're on random questions about what people use, in work for us, Microsoft Teams has become it. We do everything through Teams. And I'm wondering, is that just us or are other people?
I use Teams a lot at work. Absolutely love it as a platform. But we don't use it on, whilst it's available on mobile, we don't really use it on mobile. One of the other apps that's been looked at for cross-platform messaging is very, very WhatsApp-like, and it's Signal.
Well, Signal is the same protocol as what's under WhatsApp, but in Signal, it's the raw open source version, so you actually manage your own key, so it's actually really, really secure.
Yeah, Signal's much better.
No.
It's really just having a history of everything that's been discussed and agreed on. It doesn't just fall off after 30 days or something.
Teams is great because it ties straight into your SharePoint and stuff, so you're not copying files for someone to then lose track of and have a data breach. You're just linking to the stuff that's in your SharePoint already.
Yeah.
So there's an awful lot to be said for Teams.
I love SharePoint. I have to say, I only had one go with it for one firm once, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really
Teams,
good platform.
Yeah, Teams is quite a great tool, and they've done a great job of integrating it and sort of meshing it with all of the other Office 365 and the other products from Azure and SharePoint and everything else.
There's a fantastic...
And they're killing Skype for Business. It's officially being murdered, and it's bloody brilliant.
Yeah. Thank God. All they're going to do is build a good one for consumers.
There's a statement here from Bob Peach that if you take it out of context of the conversation we're having, it's quite alarming. I use WhatsApp to communicate with my daughter since she went over to Android. Okay. Well, I talk to my daughter in the mornings. Is that morning?
You're using this app called Life. It's quite good.
Yeah, yeah, but mate, the charges.
And it wears out over time. You become ever. You know, they have this thing where they make you ever more scraggly over time. It's very annoying.
Yeah, you run out of memory. Alistair. Talk us through your story. 3/4 of crucial border IT systems are at risk of failure.
Yeah, well, that's really the story. Not wanting to pick sides or anything, it was really to do with if there was another reason to extend the Brexit deadline, it might be this. There are supposedly eight critical border security systems, and only two of them are said to be green light, ready to go from the end of March. So 6 of them, that's 3/4 of them, are not ready, and they're kind of amber to red and won't work Now, thankfully, if you're just flying on holiday or business and back again, that's one of the two that are working. The things right. that probably won't work properly are small stuff like, you know, food imports and so on, and driving licenses, and so trucks won't be able to necessarily come across, which is great news. So maybe we should all stockpile on food after all. Lots of tin beans.
Well, medication is a thing that I think is quite concerning because
yes,
a lot of stuff that comes to Ireland is actually distributed through the UK because there's only two English-speaking countries in the EU, and so large multinationals tend not to have an Irish base and a UK base. They tend to say everything for Ireland and the UK goes to like West Midlands or East Midlands or whatever that big airport is, and from there to us. And so we're really worried here that prescriptions are going to start running out and all those kind of things.
They're worrying about it here as well, but it was, I mean, if anyone's got any sense, they would just extend it, even by, you know, a reasonably short period of maybe a year or two, if only just to get some of these things nailed down. Apparently, that for some time, they've been planning to replace the existing systems with a new one. And I assume pretty much as soon as Brexit, the vote was passed and the countdown timer was triggered, they gave up on that idea entirely and tried to make the existing systems work on their own, independently of Europe. And now they've found that it's partly because they all have to work with each other. They just can't work in parallel.
Yeah.
Literally interdependent. And this is, they've just not had enough time to make sure it all works. And, you know, British government, like any government, has a pretty bad history of making any IT system work, let alone a new one.
God.
And I think, you know, to be fair to those trying to make it work, I mean, you need a bit more time.
In the conversations we're about to have with this, I want us to make sure that we don't lose any listeners and we don't be partisan to one side or the other.
No, it's not to do with voting for or against Brexit.
Exactly.
Brexit happened. Everyone's voted for it. But this is a, you know, just weeks away, and this is fairly important.
But
the whole
point
of Brexit was to establish borders, and now we've got borders that cannot be. It's not the fact that stuff can't come in or out; it's the stuff that we're actually going to lose control of it. And people didn't vote for Brexit in order to lose control. It was the opposite.
The point is, though, that because of the rife feeling of pro and negative Brexit, any delay is just going to be seen as a backtracking process. So the Brexiteers are going to get very, very vertical very quickly. And any forcing ahead, all the Remainers are just going, holy crap, we're all going to die. But there's a good point here from Deepan that says, shouldn't these systems already be working for non-EU traffic that comes through? But I think the problem that we may have is that those systems aren't set up for country of origin to be an EU country. So they don't have a facility for how to deal with that. Or then there's no trade tariffs that have been applied to it to then start charging for excise and duty.
I think the problem is that...
Yeah, I don't know the history of when... I mean, when Article 50 was triggered, you know, did the following morning people go, right, let's fix this, or did they wait? Were they slow to start? I don't know. But, you know, even 2 years for a major IT project isn't unreasonable, and they're just not ready yet.
But I think the problem is that we're not in Schengen, are we? So stuff can come in through the far side of Europe, drive right across Europe, and then it hits the barriers when it gets to the French border with us. And I think that's the problem. The rest of Europe have got it sorted at the edge of Europe. And even Switzerland's in Schengen, isn't it? So
yeah.
It's only England.
Ireland. Hang on. Basically, we have a treaty with you guys where we don't have a border up north. And then all the rest of Europe have theirs. So basically, if it's on a contiguous landmass, there's no borders. But as soon as you put some water in between, hey presto, we have borders.
Mm.
You know, so you have a common travel area between the UK and Ireland, and then a common travel area for the whole of Schengen. And that's now going to be broken up. So that's going to cause an awful lot of trouble on this part of the world here, where goods and services, like, you know, you have milk coming from the Republic up to the north to be processed and then back down to the south to be used to make into some sort of final food, which is then shipped up north to be sold. So, you know, your pre-packed burger or whatever might cross the border 3, 4, 5 times to go from being a moo cow to being dinner.
There's a great sketch on the news quiz.
I was thinking of that one. Yeah,
yeah, where the lad's like, he's talking, he's a Southern Irish lad, but he's saying, he said, what people and the politicians don't get is that the border goes through people's houses. The border goes down the middle of a road. And he's like, you know, Mary, get your passport out. We're going to overtake this bugger. And he said it's literally that, you know,
that's your passport, you go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you can't have a high, yeah.
Yeah. One off the house. Yeah,
yeah, no, there was a bit where he said about grandpa is holed up in his bedroom, but Dignitas is legal in the front room. And grandpa, come down for your dinner. And it's no!
I have to find that. I was pissing myself.
Just had a message from Rich, and he said, all talking about that, he said, my 12-year-old nephew just told me that he's come across a video when he was watching it. So it's not fake, just misleading headlines. FYI, he asked me if I knew about it.
There's a hell of a lot between it has happened the odd time too. This is a plague that's threatening to kill kids all over the world. There is quite a bit in between. You know, never and always are not the same thing.
Anyway, I was just filling out his comment. Cool. There's no sense in pursuing. I'm of the opinion that we decided we're going to go, job's done, get out, because it's not going to get any better. And if we backtrack and someone said, let's have a re-vote and we'll stay in Europe. If we said, yes, all right, we want to stay now, Europe would absolutely have a field day with us.
Like, regardless of whether you stay or whether you go, at the end of the day, like, we're living in a technologically connected world. Time is needed. Like, if Theresa May magically got the world's best deal tomorrow morning, there still isn't enough time to make it actually, you know, technically work. Forget about politics. Put on your techie hat. You know, sysadmin for the UK cannot be done. Like, and this is a real problem because food doesn't just show up magically. It's technology. It's computer systems talking to each other. It took years to build up the system we have now. You can't just snap your fingers and make it so, no matter how much you want it to be so. So I'm just, you know, it's great to see this put on paper, you know, with simple colors. Green, good. Orange, not good. Red, terrible. Lots of red and yellow. Not nearly enough green. Yeah. Pause.
I mean, anyone here who's ever been on a participated in a corporate, you know, IT project, you know, they start off this the last 6 months and you're there for 6 years. I mean, this is norm. This is what happens.
Yeah. So if they say, well, the other thing is that this is all happening at a ridiculously high cost, because now jamming people into this work and trying to get it pushed through as fast as possible at the very last minute means it's going to cost probably about 30 times as much as it would have done with proper planning.
But that's like every IT project, just said. You know, it takes a lot longer than ever planned, and all of the action happens in the last few weeks anyway.
But a lot of it as well is the fact that the draft document for quotation for IT systems is worked out on current technology. And by the time that draft document is sent out for tender, the technology's changed. And by the time the tender's closed, the technology's changed again. And then they have to push out amendments to that contract. And that's when the firms start coining it, because there are variations from the agreement. And there's backtracking to go back to core code to change stuff over again. It is almost an impossibility to write a static contract for an IT project.
Yep.
So
for me, it was just the whole point of the Brexit vote was to take back control of your borders. And here we've got 3/4 of the systems that control the borders.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Work.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to say that most of the systems were, before I retired, there was a murder a few years ago, and it was a big report come out and said that all police systems should talk to each other, the whole country, because the problem happened because information hasn't been shared. It was a paedophile job, and information wasn't shared across borders. They did a project, all the stuff was put in, and then none of the systems talked to each other.
Yeah.
They still can't talk to each other in today. I think between the West Midlands and Staffordshire share information. But, you know, you'll get contact another force and they go, no, you can't have ours. We're not letting it pass our borders. We don't know what you're going to do with it.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. And if you want to get any information on someone, you normally have to go through the Met, because the Met control everything.
I still don't understand what it is, because that's also normal. Any corporate system or any project you start, there's loads of other bits and pieces and components and third-party add-ons. So you spend an awful lot of time getting people to write code for integrations to get them to work together. And ultimately, you know, it tends to come down to metadata. So what are these disparate police databases doing that they cannot be integrated somehow?
I think they can. It's just that there's an intransigence against some people. I think those people are probably slowly going now because, you know, the new breed are coming through.
It kind of depresses me that I'm sitting here going, wow, Ireland are actually ahead of the curve on technology.
Yes.
Like, we have a single unified police system. The thing cost far too much money, and there was all sorts of scandals about consultants being paid too much for it. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter which policeman stops you in Ireland, they all have access to the same pulse system, and they all put all the stuff in, so you don't get to hide.
You've only got one police force, though.
Yes, that's the same thing here. All of our provincial police and our city police for all the cities in Canada can all see the information for each other.
Actually, that's the other thing I never quite understood, is why would you have multiple unrelated police forces? Why wouldn't you have a national police service?
At least moving towards that, I think it'll certainly happen within my lifetime.
Well, so we have a federal police, we have the RCMP, but then we also have provincial police in each province. So Quebec has their own.
Yeah, I get it in a federal.
And then we have town police, which are another level of it.
Okay, see, we don't break them down any. Yes, that's the bit that always sort of caught me out. It's like, why is the town any different to the county, any different?
Well, that's, you know,
the country, I get, but.
Well, so the provincial police have jurisdiction between all of the towns and can protect the areas and service the areas between the cities and between the towns. And in Canada, we have quite large ranges between them. And then you have your police force that are in any town above a certain size. And then obviously city police, same, or basically just expanded versions of the town police. But then we have our RCMP, which are, you know, more like an FBI type thing, or a federal body of a police force. But even that, to my knowledge, all of it shares information all the way across.
Well, I guess in that case, the organizational hierarchy isn't a problem as long as it doesn't impede.
Your licenses your driver's licenses are issued by province.
Right.
Oh, we get access to the criminal data because that's all done by Hendon.
Mm-hmm.
It's the PNC, so Hendon organised that. But every force has to subscribe and pay money to the Met for access to that data. But that data actually belongs to us because we're constantly updating it. Or I did before I left. But, I mean, you've got to think of back in the 70s before the amalgamations into what we got now, which is just over 50 forces. There used to be like Birmingham City Police, Coventry Police, Wolverhampton Police. And all these were joined into the West Midlands Police. And that happened all over the country. Like Nottingham Police probably had Nottingham City Centre and somebody else.
So I've just done a bit of a Google. And apparently the structure of the British police force is in essence based on the fact that it was started by citizen volunteers to begin with before Robert Peel started to then formalise the process. So that localisation of enforcement was allowed to remain. And also then the assizes courts and circuits that were set up around the UK because of distances and that kind of stuff. And that created a localised enforcement process for police force through to court and imprisonment, and that's why it was regional. It is fossilised and hasn't changed, absolutely, yeah.
Well, assizes were changed in the 70s, wasn't it, when it became Crown Courts?
No, but that's why it's the way it is, Muller. I'm not suggesting that
thinking as well, you were used to have town police clauses and you had bylaws, didn't you? Which are now pretty much gone due to pace. But I mean, before that, you could, there was all sorts of weird and wonderful laws that are still in impact. I think some parts of London still have them. Like you can't do something in Hyde Park or something. I'm not going to say anything, but you know, that kind of thing. And those laws still exist. They're very rarely used, but they do exist.
There you go. And the first national police force was the Irish Constabulary.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So we've managed to do a couple of things right over the years.
No. Probably this is, by accident. This is, I think this is North, because it was formed deliberately to suppress the Fenian uprising.
Bugger. I take it back.
I would imagine.
And on that bombshell.
I would imagine Southern Ireland wasn't far behind, though, because, I mean, they've been...
Sure.
Well, the Garda Síochána have been our national force since we've had a state to have a national force.
Yeah.
Since the 30s, hasn't it, at least?
Who's got the next story?
I've dropped mine in, Ewan.
Good man. Camps, talk us through it.
So this week, Boeing have announced the Air Power Teaming System. So this is Boeing's solo unmanned aircraft that they're currently in. They're currently having development, looking for some initial flights in 2020, apparently. And this looks pretty cool. I thought I'd get a little bit of a conversation going. Looks pretty cool, but equally scares the crap out of me.
You know, it's cardboard, right?
You what?
It's just cardboard.
Won't fly until they get a HoloLens.
It won't fly until they get a grant for it.
Well, totally agree. What the idea apparently with this is that obviously the fact that it's going to be able to pull a hell of a lot more G's, it's going to be able to, in theory, operate for longer, although I don't really know how that will work. 2,000 nautical miles is on the range, so I don't know what the current flight times are for fighter pilots at the moment. I could see something like this. I certainly can't see something like this in the next 2 years, but I could see something like this down the line. But it's scary as hell from a security point of view.
But who's it going to fight? There will be no recorded kills for this plane in the history of its existence if it comes to fruition.
Well, as far as the distance, I think maybe what they're talking about is longer sustained speed, because I think fighter pilots can only go at a certain speed for a certain amount of time, and then they have to slow down because of the wear and tear on their body. But isn't this just a glorified giant drone?
Yeah,
that's exactly what I was thinking when I picked this story up. It is a faster drone.
Yeah. The enemies of countries are no longer people that you can fly planes at anyway.
I don't know, they bombed IS.
Yeah, but it's...
I just use drones.
Yeah. Why do you need an attack fighter?
How about India and Pakistan?
Yeah. Well, Vulcan bombers, didn't they? They used them in the Falklands, didn't they? They took off from the UK, flew all the way to the Falklands and back. Just had to be refueled a couple of times on the way.
They landed at Ascension, didn't they?
Well, yeah, but they can take off and go the whole length. Yeah, they still use Ascension, don't they, for manning, because my friend is a policeman there and he has to fly there.
Realistically, if they had automated fuel planes as well as these automated planes, they would probably do a much better job of fueling mid-flight than people would, because it takes away the pilot error.
Mm.
It'd be much more precise at calculating differences in air velocity and changes in air pressure and things that affect the flight speed.
We've got a guy
maintain speed and position.
There's a guy who is a listener of the network, Cam, down in Australia. Hello, mate, if you're listening. And I remember talking about automated landings and the fact that it was a feasibility of doing it. And he came back and he said, yes, so what you're saying is correct, that it is a feasibility, but an automated landing is still a massive deal. Everyone's hovering over the controls. No one trusts it. It's not a trusted process to the level of degree that you're suggesting in the way that you've put it. And I think there's probably an awful lot to do with this. If you look about automated fueling, trying to get something that's being buffeted and moving meters at a time to then go into a spigot that's coming out from a plane that's being buffeted by the wind as well as.
I'm not convinced that this should be able to do the calculations much more quickly than the human brain can do it, and thereby calculate it better. I do agree with what you're talking about as far as landing, because there are certain intangibles in landing that I would imagine could be very, very problematic.
I think there's an awful lot of intangibles.
We're making robots run and jump and things like that, which are, again, very, very delicate and extremely complex movements when you really get into it. So I don't think we're that far away from that.
Yeah, and do you think something like this, if and when it ever happens, do you think it'll be truly autonomous, or do you think this is just a giant remote control?
Well, I think it's a giant remote control for the most part.
Well, they could probably give it a target and program it. But there's a comment here. One of the biggest dangers is the ability to hack these systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine this flying with a big bomb, one of those big bunker-busting bombs that they've got?
How that happen now?
Well,
it could happen on a co-pilot, but if radar systems were hacked, mapping systems were hacked, things like that.
But they can still use a compass and a map, can't they?
Once the drone's hacked, the drone's hacked, mate. If that really was a feasibility, it would have happened, I would have thought, by now. There'd be some twitches, wouldn't there? There'd be a few tickles around the edges.
So, again, it ends up becoming... Things get hacked when they become more realistic or more feasible. If there's one or two of these out here, yeah, it'd be really cool to hack it, and it would be a really big sort of feather in your cap to be able to have hacked it and whatever. But when it comes out to that, the military's ordered 1,000 of these and there's 1,000 of them around, that's when you're going to see people really put the full-time effort into trying to hack them.
Yeah.
When there's actually some to get hold of.
Mm.
Just wait till North Korea.
I think during the test period, you're much less likely to see people trying to hack them actively. You're going to have people working like gray hats working to try and see if they can be hacked, but I don't think you're going to see any real negative actors coming into play to try and hack them until there's actually a few of them available that would make a worthwhile financial gain to have hacked them and supply them to a rival power.
But I also think that defense projects like this are purely for the purpose of maintaining jobs, or purely mm-hmm. for the purpose of lining someone's pocket.
Yep. Now, so Miller put a thing in there about hacking a Boeing 757. Yeah, there's Boeing 50, that actually speaks to my point. There's lots of Boeing 757s out there, and to have hacked one and be able to show that you can break into something that people are actually using has much more cachet for a hacker or a group of hackers than hacking one prototype of something that may never actually end up being.
Yeah. Good story, mate. And have we got anyone left?
Yeah, mine's not going to take long either.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just pacing it out. Amazon are discontinuing their dashboard buttons.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, I never saw the point of them anyway. I certainly wouldn't... want to leave one, especially if I had children nearby. Can you imagine them? This button, 20 times. And then, 400 cases of something that you didn't want comes along. So
wasn't this Amazon's tiptoe into like a bit of an Internet of Things type scenario?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they killed it themselves the minute that they created the Air Lady and you could order something by calling it out.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly why they've cancelled it, because of because of Alexa. And the fact is that we all have a phone now. We can literally just easily just pick it up and order online. I mean, my dad wanted something because he's poorly, and he was sort of on the phone to me, and I went, sort it out, and I've just got it on Amazon, and I've sent it straight to his house. No problem, sorted.
Mm. And I think that Amazon were charging, was it about 5 for these buttons, which were for a single item?
Mm. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Isn't it kind of strange?
Who on earth is going to pay £5 for a button to attach in the bathroom to order bog rolls?
Yeah,
yeah,
or whiskey.
Yeah, yours would be worn out by now, mate.
Yeah, they did send me. Tried to send me an Akatushan one. But I just think they were pointless thing. I just never really saw the point of them anyway, so I can't see anyone's going to miss them, apart from people who've already bought one.
Yeah, they'll continue to work for people who've already bought them.
Will they?
I don't know. That's the point. I wonder if they will.
If not, I can see Amazon just dropping them a £5 voucher saying, sorry, it's gone. Here's a £5 credit.
Yeah.
I got offered one of these. I bought a I bought 2 dozen golf balls, and they offered me a button for buying golf balls instantly. And it was like, I've only bought this once, and I've only bought 2 dozen of them. And there's no way this is like a, it's not a milk purchase, is it?
Yeah, but they know you.
Maybe they watched your golf game.
Well, maybe they know I'm shit.
He's
going to
need new balls.
Good point.
If you just hold on, Green, he'll be bringing out his range of golf balls soon anyway.
Yeah.
They'll be size 9.
Size 9. This podcast and all this is brought to you by TSO Host. We are very fortunate to have them on our side, and they have been absolutely wonderful to us in the last 12 months. You need to support them. If you want British tech to stick around, then you need to support TSO Host. All they want from you is the ability for you to, though, and give them brand recognition. So please, whatever you're doing, stop now. Go onto social media and say, thanks at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech. They are very happy. There's some lovely messages gone out this week from people saying that. So please make sure that you put that message out there. And also you get 20% off your basket if you do buy any hosting services. So your BTN20 is your offer code. And also thanks to Wirecast who give us the software that we use here to run the shows. It's absolutely brilliant. I'm getting far better with it now than I was before. And I'm loving every minute of it. And also thanks to Hoya, because Hoya have been wonderful and given me my glasses for doing the show. And they're awesome. And seeing how much Muller's paid for his new glasses, I'm very grateful. Right. Cool thing time. Start us off, Bart, just in case you have to bugger off early.
Okay. Well, I have another 15 minutes. So depending on how many cool things cool people have, I think we should be good. So my cool thing is something for now and something for later, so I can cost you money twice.
Hey.
So I needed a new radio alarm clock. Actually, no, I need a new alarm clock. The radio bit I don't need. And I wanted something which was easy to see from across the room, wouldn't blind me at night. And yeah, and also the biggest problem I have in the room is the amount of bloody chargers I have. So Sandman clocks are this really nice, simple alarm clock with really cool big display that has a light sensor in it. So when your room is bright, the lights come up. And when your room is dark, the lights dim down. So it never blinds you. It doesn't project the whole room full of red light. And it has 4 USB charge ports on the back. So you can plug 4 USB devices into charge overnight. So that means my phone, my tablet, and my watch can all charge at night. And I still have a spare port that I have no idea what I need it for, which is great. And so it's really nice. And right now it's really cheap. I say really cheap. It's basically about half price. So it's $24 at the moment instead of the usual price of $49. The reason is because they're about to, in the next few months, release their new product, which is like way cooler. It's called the Sandman Doppler. And they're basically trying to shift inventory before the Doppler comes out. So the Doppler is a full radio alarm clock with dashboard. It has USB-C as well as USB-A charge ports. It has automated, basically the thing is connected to the internet. You can have integrations 6 into it.
6 USB-C ports.
What did I say?
6 USB ports. That's impressive.
Yeah. Like a nice speaker. This thing is gorgeous. And they presented it at CES and Alison Sheridan did interviewed them and did a video and it just looked amazing. So I figured I'd give the company a try with their special offer on their existing product. And then if I liked it, I would buy the shiny new product and then move the first one into the guest bedroom, as you know, that could do it sometimes at the time. And so I spent my $24. Turns out I absolutely love it to bits. And so now I'm going to end up spending way more money. So yay.
And it's Amazon Alexa enabled.
I like the fact that just a tiny little thing, but from a design point of view, how they've lifted it slightly so you can just bob your cables through the front for your phone and stuff rather than have them trailing everywhere. Only a tiny little thing.
Design. Well, actually, the Doppler looks like it's got the front lifted a little bit so that you can have the cables in the back and then have them feed around underneath through the front.
Yeah, it's just, it's like their first product is nice.
It looks like a pretty decent
design. You can
tell
they've been paying really close attention, and this new Doppler is like they've learned all the little things. It's quite nice.
Excellent. Good pick, mate. Thank you very much. Mr. Campion, what have you got?
It's a shame Jeff's not here. I built one of these last week with my nephew. It's the Lego Ford Mustang. I quite like some of the creator stuff that Lego have put out. I've done the Mini and the V-Dub Camper before, but my nephew got this for Christmas. Haven't got round, what was it, Christmas? It was birthday, one or the other. Haven't got round to building it. So we did it last weekend, the Ford Mustang, and it is lovely. I've got to be honest, it looks better in person than it does on the pictures. £120 not cheap.
No.
Over 1,400 pieces. But it is stunning. As you would expect of a Lego creator, everything opens, the bonnet, the doors, the boot, the steering all works and everything. But it's such a stunning car. If you're into Lego and you don't mind paying for it, then this is a great set to have.
How big is it when it's made up?
I'd probably say it's about 10-inch. 12-inch, something like that.
I was going to say, it's about a foot long, isn't it? Yeah.
Is it? Oh, okay.
13-inch long? Yeah, 13-inch long, 5-inch wide.
Not insignificant. 3-inch high. No.
Yeah, it's not. It's not small. It's not small. It's a nice model. Of all the ones that I've built with him, it was a good technical build, and it works. It's a fun and good looking model when it's done.
Excellent.
Good looking model, but the Lego people don't fit in it.
I've never tried that. I'll try that this weekend.
Well, at that size, the Lego people would look like children in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good pick, mate. Thank you very much. Adley, what have you got for us?
So to go along with my theme of things that are being built to help us, there is a research in being done by McMaster University that they've created a fireproof sensor that can be included in gear for people that are working in high danger, in high risk situations like firefighters or miners. And it's using a new carbon aerogel nanocomposite and is fireproof. And they're testing it at 300 degrees Celsius, which is where different things start to burst into flames. And it's also self-powered. There's no battery. It gets power through triboelectric or friction-generated power. So it stores the power locally, very, very small amounts of it, but it generates power itself from its environment. So they don't have to have, it doesn't have to have a battery. It's small. It's the size of like a battery, like a button size watch battery.
Yep.
And it can be included in their, you know, the sole of their boot or under the arm of a jacket or anywhere where motion would create a pattern of like contact and release to create that friction that it needs to generate the power. And it basically just creates a sensor that would help find people in dangerous situations if they ended up trapped somewhere.
Cool.
Don't they have that now with those buttons and sirens? Well, literally, it's on their jackets, and then they go inside. It flashes and it makes a sound, and then their radios also track.
Yeah, but this is something that's better situated for one of those situations where someone's been trapped for a period of time because it doesn't need battery power. It allows them to actually use it as a sensor. It's a beacon. So they can find them from this particular sensor.
Cool. Good pick, mate. Thank you very much. Alistair, what do we got for us, mate?
Okay, it's a bit dull, but it's just some earbuds. It's not brand new. I was contacted, would you believe, at the end of last year by a company in Hong Kong who were trying to do crowdfunding for this on Indiegogo. And they sent me some to try out, and of course, inevitably, they didn't work properly. So I didn't talk about them then. But right. I've since acquired a set on my own, and actually, they're pretty good. If you see the website, they've got two types. There's, so, you know, this is the recharging box. I don't know if you can see this. And the earbuds are quite small, but, you know, they've got the type that just fit into your ear and recharge. Yeah. And they've got a very, very good, clear, weighty bass without losing the top end. And they've also got the gaming set, which are more expensive. I have to say, I find them extremely uncomfortable, but then I don't play games, which are kind of a more conventional, sticky type that go in.
Yeah.
And they're less than half the price of what I've seen elsewhere. And they last, you know, several hours before you have to stick them back in the box. So I was quite pleased with those. Yeah.
Cool. No, good one. £49 for the small one, £79 for the gaming one. Good one. Muller, what have you got for us?
Well, my dad's computer is up the Swanee, and I keep having to fix it. So I was looking around. I've got a couple of old ones, but I still think they're causing problems. And I found this on online, which is the Lynx, which is a very, very cheap Windows tablet. So it does full Windows. Comes with the keyboard, so unlike the Surface, you don't have to buy the keyboard extra, and it'll do everything that my dad will need, which is basically shopping online and just bits and pieces and keeping in touch with family. So I just think that this might be the way. It'll cost me some money, but I think in the long run it'll save me some heartache and probably pain.
Because it's very Surface-like, isn't it?
It's basically what Microsoft wanted is the Surface to be sort of a an indicator design, or like the design to go for, and they wanted people to copy that design and come up with their own versions of it. And this is actually quite a nice version of it. It's quite a nice low cost version of basically a Surface. It's even cheaper than the Microsoft Go.
Yeah. You know, £180, and that includes the keyboard. The Go, you have to, the keyboard's extra.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, usually the keyboard on a Surface Go, I think, is just about that.
Yeah, so it's quad core. Yeah. It's quad core. It's got a reasonable amount of RAM. It's got enough storage for the kind of stuff that my dad would do. And I bet you, for most people, that would be perfect machine.
Yeah,
the keyboard actually goes 100.
My iPad Pro keyboard, I could have got 11 of these.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And we could run Natalie's app on that. So we could be watching the show on that.
I've got a small, I can't remember the name of it, Lenovo in there that runs the Etcher. And I'm blown away by it. The memory and the storage isn't very good, but it's not horrific. It does a simple job. It'd be fine for running email, PowerPoint, that kind of stuff without any issues.
So, can you stick an SD card in?
Yes.
You go.
But this one, the one he's showing here, doesn't look like it takes an SD card.
No, I don't think it does.
It's solid state.
Mine's a laptop. It was only £149 as well. So,
if you look, it says it runs for 7 hours on one charge. I mean, I think it's quite underpowered. Right.
Vastly underpowered.
Well, it's an Atom processor, so as long as you're not doing anything crazy.
Yeah.
It's enough for your dad.
Yeah. I mean, you could easily watch a TV on it or something in bed, I would imagine. I might have to pull the trigger on this before it gets back up in price, because it's nearly half price, look at the moment.
So, cool. Good pick, mate. Thank you very much.
Mm.
Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Campion?
You can get me at Campion UK on Twitter. My running stuff on Instagram is just run Chris. Get me in the Slack room.
Excellent. Bart, where can people get hold of you?
Easiest thing to do is go to bartb.ie and just click the link to what you want, be it Twitter, be it my podcast. It's all there, bartb.ie.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Atlee,
you can reach me at atleehunter.com or on Twitter or Instagram at atleehunter.
Thanks. Alistair?
So far I'm at The Register. That's theregister.co.uk. Friday mornings.
Excellent. And Muller?
Muller Biker on Twitter. Muller999 on Instagram. Yeah. And on Slack room.
Excellent. My name is Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and you can follow the network at British Tech. We'll be back again next Friday. If it's not Friday, it's not happening. So get yourself along and come and have a good bit of fun with us shooting the breeze about all the tech stories that have gone on. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.